Chapter 13. Pansy and geranium plants who stopped outside the window, signaling to Annalisa to buy. An hour went by before the door of the back room opened, and the priest reappeared with that mysterious covered something in his hands. Annalisa had risen, drawing back as he passed. He had doubtless divined her antipathy, for he had hitherto only bowed in going in and out. But today he paused and looked at her compassionately. "I have left your sister in a very beautiful state of mind," he said in a low voice like a woman's. "He is full of spiritual consolation." Annalisa was silent, and he bowed and went out. As he hastened back to Evelina's bed, and knelt down beside it. Evelina's eyes were very large and bright. She turned them on Annalisa with a look of inner illumination. "I shall see the baby," she said. Then her eyelids fell and she dozed. The doctor came again at nightfall, administering some last palliatives. And after he had gone, Annalisa, refusing to have her vigil shared by Miss Mellins or Mrs. Hawkins, sat down to keep watch alone. It was a very quiet night. Evelina never spoke or opened her eyes, but in the still hour before dawn Annalisa saw that the restless hand outside the bedclothes had stopped its twitching. She stooped over and felt no breath on her sister's lips. The funeral took place 3 days later. Evelina was buried in Calvary Cemetery, the priest assuming the whole care of the necessary arrangements, while Annalisa, a passive spectator, beheld with stony indifference this last negation of her past. A week afterward she stood in her bonnet and mantle in the doorway of the little shop. Its whole aspect had changed. Counter and shelves were bare, the window was stripped of its familiar miscellany of artificial flowers, notepaper, wire hat frames, and limp garments from the dyers, and against the glass pane of the doorway, hung a sign: "Colon this store to let." Annalisa turned her eyes from the sign as she went out, and locked the door behind her. Evelina's funeral had been very expensive, and Annalisa, having sold her stock in trade, and the few articles of furniture that remained to her, was leaving the shop for the last time. As he had not been able to buy any mourning, but Miss Mellins had sewed some crepe on her old black mantle and bonnet, and having no gloves she slipped her bare hands under the folds of the mantle. It was a beautiful morning, and the air was full of a warm sunshine that had coaxed open nearly every window in the street, and summoned to the window sills the sickly plants nurtured indoors in winter. Annalisa's way lay westward, toward Broadway, but at the corner she paused and looked back down the familiar length of the street. Her eyes rested a moment on the blotched and her sisters above the empty window of the shop. Then they traveled on to the overflowing foliage of the square, above which was the church tower with the dial that had marked the hours for the sisters before Annalisa had bought the nickel clock. She looked at it all, as though it had been the scene of some unknown life, of which the vague report had reached her. She felt for herself the only remote pity that busy people accord to the misfortunes which come to them by hearsay. She walked to Broadway, and down to the office of the house agent to whom as he had entrusted the subletting of the shop. She left the key with one of his clerks, who took it from her, as if it had been any one of a thousand others, and remarked that the weather looked as if spring was really coming. Then she turned and began to move up the great thoroughfare, which was just beginning to wake to its multitudinous activities. She walked less rapidly now, studying each shop window as she passed, but not with the desultory eye of enjoyment. The watchful fixity of her gaze overlooked everything but the object of its quest. At length she stopped before a small window wedged between two mammoth buildings, and displaying, behind its shining plate glass festooned with muslin, a varied assortment of sofa cushions, tea cloths, pen wipers, painted calendars and other specimens of feminine industry. In a corner of the window as he had read, on a slip of paper pasted against the pane: "Colon wanted, a celestity," and after studying the display of fancy articles beneath it, she gave her mantle a twitch, straightened her shoulders and went in. behind a counter crowded with pin cushions, watch holders and other needlework trifles, a plump young woman with smooth hair sat sewing bows of ribbon on a scrap basket. The little shop was about the size of the one on which Annalisa had just closed the door, and it looked as fresh and gay and thriving as she and Evelina had once dreamed of making Bunner sisters. The friendly air of the place made her pluck up courage to speak. Celestity? Yes, we do want one. Have you anyone to recommend? The young woman asked, not unkindly. Annalisa hesitated, disconcerted by the unexpected question, and the other, cocking her head on one side to study the effect of the bows he had just sewed on the basket, continued, "We can't afford more than $30 a month, but the work is light. She would be expected to do a little fancy sewing between times. We want a bright girl. Stylish, and pleasant manners. You know what I mean. Not over 30, anyhow, and nice looking. Will you write down the name?" Annalisa looked at her confusedly. She opened her lips to explain, and then, without speaking, turned toward the crisply curtained door. "Ain't you going to leave the AD dress?" the young woman called out after her. Annalisa went out into the thronged street. The great city, under the fair spring sky, seemed to throb with the stir of innumerable beginnings. She walked on, looking for another shop window with a sign in it. The end. End of the Project Gutenberg text of Bunner Sisters by Edith Wharton. Bunner by Gutenberg Edition.